You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. I hope you're going to get a chance to do this weekend all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if you don't have to do it, I'm still in that mode of stay home. Protect yourself. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, you know. And by that, I meant a lot of, you know, controversy, a lot of G5, don't wear a mask, this and that and the other. No, the bottom line is people are dying still in this country and around the world. Pretty soon, the top country will be Brazil because of its lack of leadership, its fascist president, its government. And America will pretty much stay whole, stand pat, because people will continue to die because of the ignorance of the fascist leadership here. So my contention is protect yourself. Do whatever you have to do. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain Time, or 8 to 10 Pacific Time, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, podcast, click on that, and then there will be African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. A sad note, Brother Franklin Jones will not be on. Brother Franklin Jones, I haven't talked with him. I've seen his text to me. But the Black People Matrix will not be on. So this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., but today's Friday, tonight at 8 p.m., oh, that's Time for an Awakening. That's right, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening. And then on Saturday, Time for Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition with Dr. William Rogers. Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition from 4 to 6. And then on Sunday, Time for an Awakening again at 7 p.m. Every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., the Warren Ballantyne Show. Right here on Time for an Awakening Media, and the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. That's right, Brother Bomani Tayemba AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brothers and sisters, go online to Brother Bomani's website, and you may have the opportunity, if you so choose, to have a trip of a lifetime. Everything on the website is there for you. He has 2 trips upcoming this year. He had 4. He had to postpone them or reschedule them. So he has a trip coming up in November to South Africa, November 20th through the 30th to South Africa, $3,700. Then he has a trip to Ghana, December 24th to January 5th, 2021 for $3,700. You can go online and get all the information you need. You also can give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see video of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest market, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Also, when you get on the website, they are still seeking donations to have a supermarket here in the Atlanta area carrying growers, farmers, any other products that are produced by us, because that's what they're about. Help them out. Renoko Rashidi, Baba Renoko, he has a trip coming up in October to Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th. Great pictures on his website, drrenoko.com, drrenoko.com. Then he has a trip immediately following that, October 22nd through November 4th, going to Kemet. Habashah, habashahincorporated.org. Go to habashahincorporated.org. These brothers and sisters deserve to be supported. They are doing the work. Habashah stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habashah.org. Once again, the shrine is not open. And I don't know when it's going to be opening soon, but I did talk to the sister in the Greenbrier Mall who has the Medu bookstore, Mama Nia. She is open. Give her a call at 404-346-3263 to see if she has the book that you would like. And if she doesn't, I'm quite sure she'll get it for you. Another bookstore, the same situation, is Black Dog Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. My good brother, Brother Kazimde Ajamu. The number to call is 404-519-8107. He also has the red, black, and green shoes. And he also has a coffee bar for those who want to come in and have some, a cup of delicious Cameroon boyo. Ha-ha. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, located on 878 Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Veg and the West End Mall. And they have all kinds of good, delicious smoothies and juice drinks and all kind of good stuff there at the Wadada's. They also have apparel. They also have the Dogon. They have athletics, the Dogon Starseed, the Moors, the Omex. Exciting stuff, and you can go there and check that out and buy that. Go to, if you want to check it out online, go to athletics, www.afr-letics.com, athletics. Also, too, We Buy Black is located in Wadada's. They moved from when they had a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall to Wadada's. So they are there, and you can buy the products that are on We Buy Black, okay? Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m.
from 9 to 10 on blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Their program is called Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us. If you want to call in, the number, you can call in and listen, or you can call in and comment. And the number is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti and Sister Yah, they're having a Common Sense Security workshop, virtual online. On the 13th of next month, I'll have more of that information as it approaches. But this is a constant. This is Akaban Institute, this educational arm of what they do for our people. And they need to be supported because they will seek no outside funding, no Caucasian money, no foundation money. It's all about us. It's all about us. And give them a call or send check or money order to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your donation. Sanjay-Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Oriel, and what she is doing in the island of Haiti. It's phenomenal with those beautiful children. When you see them in uniform, clean and so forth, man. And they have three focuses: the education, the healthcare, and sustainable agriculture and entrepreneurship before. You know. So check it out. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti. And I know everybody pronouncing Haiti, but it's pronounced Haiti. AYITI.org. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. May 28th. And I'm going to be talking with my guest, Brother Akil Parker. And what's interesting is we're going to talk about what's everybody's talking about, the death of Brother George Floyd and the sister in Louisville and anything and anywhere around the world where our people are and Caucasians are, you know how we're treated. And so we're going to talk about that. And so this is interesting. In the Inye Sesem, I say it all the time. I have the topic or talk about it, a topic or have a guest, and then when I go to the Inye Sesem, it's right there, you know. And here's one of them. This is by Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. I love Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. He was a Pan-Africanist. And, he had this one quote that I love, and that is, God is black. God has got to be black because if God is a white man, there is no hope. If God is a Caucasian, there is no hope. You know, yeah. If God is a Caucasian, a white man, there is no hope. The Inye Sesem, a daily revolutionary thought. May 28th, till we have black men in the seat of power, respected, feared, hated, and revered, our young men will never rise for the reason they will never look up. Henry McNeil Turner. If there's nothing to see, people tend not to look up. So if there has to be a presidency here and now, wherever our Jegna, remember Jegna, that's a plural for those who help rear our young men and young women, those models. They're called mentors, but we don't use that word. We don't use mentor. And Jegna is a plural for Jegna. Jegnak is a plural for Jegna. Whatever our Jegnak are, for Sappho and Sappho are warriors to want to fulfill their warrior's mission. It's time for a gathering of old men and women. Our elders must set an example of warriorhood in the tradition of the ageless warrior. It is time for a vanguard of elders willing to risk their fixed incomes and ignore their aches and pains to clear a revolutionary path by practical example. Acts of liberation can only be taught through a demonstration. What is there to lose but one's ancestralship? This is not a call for our elders to become anarchists. That is a European disposition. Chaos for the sake of chaos. Destruction for the sake of destruction. Destruction and chaos simply for their own sake is counterproductive, when in the end, the old European order is simply replaced with a new European order. This is not what we are after. And Europe culture cannot be changed into anything African. We have to see that historically, anarchy in a European strategy where the frustrated dispossessed seek to undermine the stability and security of their empowered brothers so they can replace them by appropriating their privilege. Anarchy is only an effective nation-building tool if used in the context of a conscious vision. Affirm, I exude power. Affirm, I exude power, rightfully respected, feared, and hated. Affirm, I exude power, rightfully respected, feared, and hated. May 29th, global equality is accessible only through raw, naked power. Power that is economics, yes, but power that is also military. All other avenues have been tried and found wanting. Clarence Munford. The military is the institution with the responsibility of defending the people from others who would deprive them from their way. Whether of a standing army or organized out of citizen soldiers at a moment's notice, a militia. It is the arm extension of any whole culture. It is only a healthy, solvent, sovereign people grounded in their fully functioning culture who have successfully waged a physical battle against any aggressive group or other nation whose hostility in some way prevents them from being self-defining, self-empowering, and whole. The military is not just a minor appendage of a society in contrast to the other social institutions. During times of invasion, assault, occupation, domination, or other harmful violations from outside, the military ascends as the most important institution. The intellect, energy, and resources of the educational, political, religious, familiar, and economic institutions become dedicated to the war effort. For it is a natural defense mechanism for people to protect themselves. It is a first response for any living organism. And society is a living organism. Any people conscious of being threatened or attacked mobilizes for defense and retaliates to school the attacker. It is only a people who have become vanquished into submission, into pacification, who do not respond militarily to invasions, assault, and occupations, or dominations from outside. Affirm, I am a credible military threat. Affirm, I am a credible military threat. May 30th. Revolution is not a gig for crybabies, not a cantu. We are now witnessing a cultural and social degeneration through multiple generations of progressive spoilage. There have been misguided spoilage in our community before, but this is not. But this is new. It is a selfish, hedonistic, willful, and arrogant form of spoilage which comes with no sense of benevolence, humanistic responsibility to others whatsoever, unless some form of reward is offered. Those afflicted in this way have no desire to work or accomplish anything of worth except possibly when it affords the opportunity to gain more individualistic things and to satisfy the needs for attention. Africans victimized in this way have no respect for others except for those with the will and the means to punish them when disrespected. Those who reward them without this capacity are taken for granted and dismissed accordingly. With this new form of spoilage, our community's potential to defend itself from external assault and internal discord have become even more difficult. Unknown to most of us, it is not our children's fault. They did not raise themselves. However, we know that there are those who know what they are doing. We have people who hide their pale insanities behind the mask of an African sinner. And those who claim to be warriors, but who refuse to do the hard work of relinquishing their highly individualistic European imperatives when rearing our children do more damage to our movement than Negroes, lost souls, or even Europeans. Affirm, by example, I do not rear crybabies. This ain't for the weak, y'all. This ain't for the squeamish. This ain't for the faint at heart. This is serious. This is serious. We have a caller. Good morning, caller. 646. Good morning. Good morning, caller. 646. Good morning. Okay. Thought I had a caller so early in the program. Talking today with Kill Parker, he should be on with me very shortly. You know, Brother Kill is an educator out of the Philadelphia area, but we're going to talk today about what everybody's talking about across the country, and that is the murder of George Floyd. And what was interesting, the day after it happened, Stephen Jackson.
Hotep, Brother Oshie.
Oh, hey, Jay. Hotep, Jay, how are you?
I was on mute by mistake. I just wanted to say to you, peace. And let me tell you something.
Go ahead,
what
brother.
What you're talking about today is a very, very serious matter.
I agree.
Because for Corey Sellers, I'm going to say it outright, plain and simple. He need his ass whipped to go on national TV and start crying like a useless, you know what I want to say, but a useless, cowardice man for you Rugals. My elders, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and the rest are turning over in their graves.
Who you talking about? Who you talking about?
Bakari Sellers, the Negro from your state, I think it is. No, sorry. I'm not going to give you all that bad mouth. South Carolina, with that other footstool, Jim Clyburn, goes on CNN and starts crying over the murder of Mr. Floyd. That Negro needs to just be beat. I'd like to apologize to African people who had to witness that foolishness, who had to witness a grown man cross instead of standing up and being a warrior like he's supposed to. I apologize to Khalid. I apologize to Dr. Clark and all of my elders for the spirit of that dog. That dog. That's what he is. He's a dog and a coward to do that to black men and young black women.
All right. All right, Jay. You continue to listen, brother. I hear you. I don't know who that individual is, but I understand what Jay said. And if you have listened to the program when I was reading the Inye Sesim, it talked about that. That's what I'm saying all the time. It you know, it hits home right away. And the bottom line is, to me, as a brother who is sincere about African people and sincere about Africa returning home, I wouldn't march. I wouldn't demonstrate. I wouldn't do, that's me. Now, because let's be real, haven't we done that? Haven't we been continuing to do that? Every time there's a situation, we do it. And then sometimes we're placated to, and sometimes we're just straight up ignored. And the same situation continues to happen. Doesn't it? Yeah, it does. So to me, you know, this chaos, these disturbances, and as Dr. King said, a riot, is the language of the unheard, A riot is the language of the unheard. You know. And our guest is here, Brother Akil Parker. Good morning.
Peace. Good morning, Baba Oshie. How are you?
I am well. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I wanted to jump right in and add on to the last caller, the elder that called in.
Yes.
And, you know, just make, you know, say a couple words about Bakari Sellers. He's not one of my, I mean, this is not a popularity contest, but he's not one of my favorite people. Bakari Sellers is actually the son of Cleveland Sellers, who was a, you know, civil rights activist, human rights activist in the 1960s. He was down with SNCC. He was down with Kwame Ture. They went to Howard together.
Okay. Okay.
Cleveland Sellers was involved in another massacre, another example in the long line of examples in this country when black life and black people have been murdered by the state and by the government in Orangeburg, South Carolina, at South Carolina State. Young brothers and sisters, you know, trying to get their education,
mm-hmm.
you know, at South Carolina State. Cleveland Sellers was involved in that.
Okay.
That's his state where he's from. So, you know, it's an example. This is something else that we have to, maybe not on this particular episode, but something else that we have to have a discussion about in the community is how sometimes the apple does fall very far from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, of course, Bakari Sellers is not a Pan-Africanist. He's not an African senator. He has love for the Democratic Party.
Okay.
He's ride or die for the Democratic Party,
okay.
no matter what. So
yeah.
that's how I see him. But it always makes me think about, you know, how we, like in ASCAC, we talk about training our replacements and building
right.
for eternity.
Right.
So makes us think about the challenges of that. You know, I wonder about, you know, because I have children of my own, and I wonder, like, how I'm attempting to raise them to carry on traditions. Am I going to be successful or not? And then I look at certain elders that I have a lot of respect for, and then I wonder also sometimes, like, you know, well, where are your sons and your daughters and your grandchildren, your nieces and your nephews?
Mm-hmm.
And I see how difficult it is
it
with
is.
All the different challenges and distractions and the ways in which we're getting pulled. Because at one point in time, I wasn't thinking the way that I think now. And I didn't care about, you know, the conversations that we have on this program. I didn't care about these types of things at one point in time, you know. And I had a different worldview. But
mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted, I'm glad the brother called in and said that, because that also speaks to this larger issue about us, you know, trying to just having the goal of building independent space
mm-hmm.
and build independent nation, independent society. And everybody's not down for that. And I think one of the things we have to do is kind of accept that too.
Well,
and just keep building.
I think because we are in it, we are in the belly of the beast, as the saying goes. We're in a society that is established by Caucasians or Europeans for them. In fact, everything they do is for them. Okay? Europeans are not a giving people. They are takers. They are underminers. They are supplanters. They are not a giving people. They are not a people that show kindness and they give an illusion of that, but that is not who they are. Malcolm said it best once again, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history of Europeans. Look how they have behaved over time. Even though you can look at the history through their narratives, through their people who write it, and still you can see the selfishness, the greediness, the underhandedness, the murderous nature of them. Because sometimes you just can't sugarcoat it. They are who they are. That's why, to me, these things will continue to happen. We will continue to be shot down and killed and murdered, and not just by police. And, of course, you know how we do things to ourselves. So I would love for us to be out of this madness, close ranks, pull resources, and do for ourselves. I would love for that to happen. But I recognize it cannot happen here because of the multitude of brothers and sisters whose minds are it about it. Because we're in a society that perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. It is that way from its inception. And of course, that's why people want to come here, because they think, I can make it. You know, I will leave family and friends and everybody back. It is about me. I'm trying to get mine.
Right.
And then the mindset is, if I got mine, and if you didn't get yours, it's your fault. It ain't the society. It's your fault. Because it's there to be gotten. Not understanding, because it's not like it was when we were in captivity. It's not like it was when they had real hardcore segregation laws and Jim Crow laws and so forth. It's not. No, it is subtle. There is the illusion of inclusion. There is a belief that it is all. See, people, well, you can make it. We all can make it. No, you can't. Hell, it ain't even that way for Caucasians. They can't all make it. And so, like I said, a riot is the language of the unheard. And because they consistently don't want to hear us, they wish we would just disappear. You know, they wish we would just disappear. They don't want to hear us, because they'll continue to do to us what they are doing to us. Is, you know what it is, brother Akil? It's mind over matter. They don't mind doing to us what they have done to us and continue to do to us, because why? We don't matter. Right. Period.
And I think we have to accept that. I think we have to be more realistic. And mm-hmm. I think that some of us say that. Some of us say, okay, we accept their view of us. People see it as weak, but I think it's actually strong, because we're dealing with reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think deal with that reality, then it has to motivate at least some of us to move toward independence and to move toward us truly being self-reliant and saying, okay, we need to create for ourselves. We need to create everything for ourselves. We need infrastructure. We need a nation. We need water. We need electricity. We need our own schools. We need our own hospitals, our own healthcare centers. We need our own banks. We need our own. We need all black everything.
Right.
And I think too, like in terms of dealing with, you know, rest in peace to George Floyd. And I think in terms of the response, I think that this is an opportunity for us to move toward that independence. But I think we have to be honest about the fact that many of us, we just don't want to see black people get murdered on video. And I think that unfortunately, that's going to be the resolution. You know, there's going to be some conversations in police precincts, and then the police training to let people know. You know, they may even send out memos. It's like, okay, just don't kill the black people on video.
Well,
you know,
yeah. Well,
we still want you to devalue their lives. We still want you to be the military arm mm-hmm. of the corporate capitalist neo-colonial infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We still want the guns that protect all of that, right? And I think that's another thing, too, we have to talk about, is how we can't look at the police apparatus as this separate and distinct entity in and of itself. It is like there's no real separation between the police and police murder and police terrorism and Amazon. There's no separation between police murder and Facebook and Instagram. All these corporations, they're protecting these corporations. They're protecting local businesses. They're protecting these governments, these locals and local and state and federal governments that are maintaining the status quo. So we have to also look at it, you know, and then get into the class analysis, because then we have to be honest about and ask some questions about wealthy and celebrity black people that are speaking out against the racism aspect, but yet they're very much entrenched and mm-hmm. invested in mm-hmm. this corporate neo-colonial structure that pays them very handsomely to help maintain the neo-colonialism, help to maintain the status quo. But they're really just saying, so it's really just an issue of just don't kill black people on video, right? Keep doing what you're doing, maintain the status quo, maintain the system as it is, but just don't kill black people on video.
Right.
As long as you don't kill people on video, then, you know, everything will be fine. You know, You know, we're not going to make waves. We're not going to riot. We're not going to rebel. Just don't kill us on video.
Mm-hmm. And
so, and I think that's the problem.
That's
the problem.
Well, you know, the first time we seen it on video was Rodney King. First time we seen police giving a brother a beat down was Rodney King. And was that 92. Because a guy had a camcorder.
Mm-hmm.
And he was across the street from the Apnins, and he filmed it, and we saw it. And even though the trial for those police officers were taken out of L.A. County and moved to Simi Valley, the verdict was what it was, not
right.
guilty. Because in the minds of those Caucasians is that the police are the buffer between us good, law-abiding Caucasian citizens and that ugly, evil element of lawlessness and so forth. They're the buffer. And so, therefore, the police, you know, they had a romantic thing about police from back in the, because, you know, the history of the police is what it is. They were first the patrol, the catchers, you know. So the history of the police has always been sordid. But they had an image of the 40s and 50s and even up to like about the early 60s of protect and serve, officer friendly,
right.
officer friendly, protect and serve. That changed, and particularly in the 90s and into 2000s with the training. Not at protect and serve, now is comply or die. The police are the army, are the military armed, as you said earlier, between the good people, those Caucasians, and their wealth, and all the and the masses. And
right.
the masses. That's who they are. And if you don't comply, you may die. If I tell you to get out your car, Sandra Bland, and put that cigarette out, and you don't do it the way I want it done and when I want it done, you'll die. And it will be justified, even though now almost everything you can see is on video because people have a camera in their pocket on their person. So as you approach a situation, you can just start filming when it don't look right. Just like I seen that one, I don't remember where that one's from, where that police was giving that brother a beat down in the middle of the street, and his lady was hollering and screaming and so forth until finally police came and threw her on the ground and handcuffed her. You're going to see this. It's going to be consistent. But the problem for us is how do we respond? When we
right.
just go ahead and march again, we go have another rally and then start tearing some shit up? No. What do you think?
I think one of the things is we have to have a serious conversation about what justice for somebody really means. Like, what does that really look like? And who you know, how do we decide? How can we come together and form some type of consensus? And even if we can't form a consensus, but what are our thoughts on what justice looks like? Does justice mean that the police officer is fired? Does justice mean that he goes to trial and he's sentenced? To go to jail but the system still maintains itself. Like, is that real justice? I tend to think at this point that justice really means us moving toward independence, creating a different system for ourselves where our children and our grandchildren are far less susceptible to these types of happenings. I'm not going to say it's going to be a utopia. I'm not going to say it's going to be sweet and we won't ever have any issues from the outside as they would become. Because anytime you build something, you have to be able to defend it.
That's right.
So it's not going to mean that it's going to be easier, you know, but eventually things would be better for our people. We'd be able to relax a little bit in space that we control. And I think, you know, we have to have that conversation about what does justice look like?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times the conversation around justice just means us things returning to a more comfortable status quo. So it's almost like, justice just means we want to be more comfortable on this plantation.
Mm-hmm.
That's justice. Like, oh, he got murdered on the plantation and we all had to watch and see. And that's traumatizing for us. And it is traumatizing for us. But we're not talking about leaving the plantation. We're not talking about burning down the plantation or replacing the plant, replacing our living space. Right. We're not talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then even, you know, a lot of times lawsuits are filed lawyers come out, there are trials, a police department gets sued, a city solicitor has to defend the city, and then the family gets a settlement, and then that's our tax dollars anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's our tax dollars. So we actually are paying for this behavior, this violence visited upon a member of our community. We're paying for that, you know, when there is a guilty verdict in a civil suit. We're paying for that anyway. It's not coming out of their pocket. You know, these police officers don't become homeless because they have to pay, you know, the family directly from their paycheck. Mm-hmm. That's not happening. So, I mean, you know, we gotta think about, you know, what is the end game here? And I think there's a lot of language. Whenever one of these situations occurs, there's a lot of language that I think we have to cleanse ourselves of and purge. Like we have to stop saying things like this was a senseless act of violence or a senseless murder. It's not, because I think that limits our response to it. Mm-hmm. It almost makes it seem as though this is an anomaly. Because if something is senseless, then it's like, oh, well, that in our mind, as you process, you think, oh, this doesn't make sense. It's senseless. But then you say, no, but it makes perfect sense. This mm-hmm. is violent.
Yes.
This is the same type of violence that has been visited upon us ever since we've been in this nation.
That's right.
There's nothing new about it.
It's not going to stop. It's not going to stop.
So we have to begin to look at it like that, because mm-hmm. then that will through the law of self-preservation, I believe, then that will motivate us to then want to say, okay, we got to do something different. We can't try to just fit into this. Mm-hmm. We can't. Long term, we got to at least start thinking about how to divest from this. We got to figure that out. It's not a senseless murder. We have to stop saying things like, I'm not a threat. He was not a threat. He was a threat. I'm a threat. You're a threat. Every black man and woman in this country is a threat to national security. We are threats to white supremacy. We always have been.
And always will be.
We are black. And I'm going to use black or African interchangeably here. We are black and Africans in anti-black and anti-African space. Mm-hmm. We have to begin from there. We have to begin from the fact that we are human. Also, like Du Bois said, I begin all my studies with the fundamental assumption that the African is a human. Their fundamental assumption is that the African is not a human.
Mm-hmm.
So we're already mm-hmm. at odds. We're already not on the same page. So when we say, you assert yourself and say, no, I'm a human being, you're already a threat. You are a threat to the core and the foundation of this nation. So we can't say things like, he wasn't bothering nobody. He wasn't doing nothing. He was doing something. We're all doing something. We got to start looking at things differently. We got to start looking at things like that and being more honest. Because if we do that, then again, I believe that it will motivate us, at least psychologically, to become more self-reliant and to become more bold and to believe and start to move in a more independent way. And we have to say, you know, I heard a celebrity on Instagram talking about, you know, her response, you know, was that this is not apartheid South Africa, and they can't do that to us. And we have to let these white people know, and this is not 1860 in the South. And I'm like, sis, this is apartheid South Africa. This is 1860. That has not changed. That is it. And because we allow ourselves to, many of us live in this fantasy world where we don't think it's like 1860 in the South. We don't think it's like apartheid South Africa. When something like this happens, and the video comes out, we experience this deep cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't handle it. But if we dealt with reality, then we'd be able to handle it. We'd be like, oh, okay, all right, you know, this is par for the course. So now what am I going to do? What are we going to do? Okay, we need to organize more. We need to step up our efforts to educate our own children. We need to step up our efforts to recruit more people to become doctors that are going to have healthy, that are going to function in healthcare facilities that are focused on maintaining and promoting the health of people in the black community. We need to do more of that. We need to pool our resources. We need to be more of sound mind in terms of our economics. We need to, you know, it's going to be a motivation. But as long as we think of these things as anomalies and like statistical outliers, then it's like, oh, well, just, you know, eliminate the outlier. Let's address that outlier. and the outlier goes away, and we're back to normal, business as usual.
Right. And I think the
We need systemic change. And we can't have systemic change if we're looking at these incidents as I said, anomalies and statistical outliers, and we're looking at them as if they're senseless, when they make a lot of sense. They've always made sense. You know, it's always made sense why Black lives have been regarded in the way that they've been. Because we live, as you said, we live in a space that is maintained and controlled by Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
So we succumb to, or we're at the mercy of, as long as we want to fit in this space, you know, as long as we want to fit into this space, this is a space that they control.
That's right.
So we have to be honest about what the outcomes are going to be. As long as we're in a space that they control, then we're at their whim. We're at their mercy.
And so to me, that's why we must understand we got to get out. The movie Get Out, perfect. Love it. Get out. We have to prepare ourselves. The Exodus in the Bible did not happen. That didn't happen. That's not true. That's not historical. But we need an Exodus. We need to prepare ourselves and prepare our brothers and sisters on the continent to receive us, to work on the continent, to prepare the continent for our needs, to kick out the neo-colonialists, to kick out the despots, to kick out the ignorant, to kick out those men and women who have been trained in the West to support the West. Kick them out and educate ourselves, prepare for ourselves, agriculturally, military, whatever it is. But we cannot do it here. In this country, what you see is what you get. You will always be a second class. You will always be in a begging mode. You will always be behind Europeans in terms of their culture, in terms of their society. They run it. We're dealing with a selfish, evil entity that we don't understand. They have imposed upon us all of that madness, all of that insanity, their culture, their language, their traditions, their religion, all of it, and we have accepted it. That's why, to me, Wade Nobles has probably the most definitive definition of power, because people believe that power is money. Power is money. No, it's not. Because the European who controls the money, if he wants, in fact, right now, the money's not backed up by anything but the European's word. And what backs up to his word? The ability to kill your ass.
Right.
It's not backed up by any resource. You know? And so, no real power from that. Power is not education and information, because if the education and information that you receive is flawed and inaccurate, and I maintain that it is, no power from that. Education, power is not politics. We have more people in politics today than we've ever had, and our condition, our situation is worse. In fact, many of the politicians go up there to be self-serving. No power from that. It's not voting. What is power? Power is the ability to define reality and then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans, when they woke up out of that dark age, that medieval age, they decided that they were going to run the world. They said when Martel and Charlemagne and their cats kicked the Moors and then the Sephardic Jews out of the western part of Europe, and they said, you know, we may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us, and we're going to dominate them. When they began to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, you name it, they didn't come to trade. They didn't come to barter. They didn't come to share. They came to take. They imposed their culture And then once they had intimate relationship with the females, rape, they noticed that the offspring did not look like them. That's why Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said that caused an innate fear in them of their genetic annihilation, proving that they must control and suppress every... That's why we dying? Here in this country, our population should have grown. But it's not. We're still at supposedly 12 to 15% at the most. We should have been in the 20s. Our population is young, but no, it is suppressed through various means. Homosexuality, mass incarceration, drug addiction, miscegenation. We have, you know what? I'm about to go to a break, Brother Akil. I'm going to go to a break. I got some callers that are on. So we're going to go to a break. When I come back from the break, Brother Akil, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm gonna respond to a couple things you said.
Okay, for sure. Soon we come back to break, it's gonna be on you. Okay.
Okay.
All right, dear brother. Brothers and sisters, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 12 a.m. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And my guest today is Brother Akil Parker, educator out of Philadelphia. We'll have questions. You will open up for questions and so forth. The number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Gunshots and pretty beats. come along with me. Hear my city speak. It's talking to you. It's giving you a heads up. It's saying that niggas round here is getting fed up. It's the sound of Philadelphia. Gunshots and gritty beats. Come along with me. Hear my city speak. It's talking to you. It's giving you a heads up. It's saying that niggas round here is getting fed up.
Welcome back. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. I kind of jumped the gun, didn't I? You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. How'd you like that Philadelphia there, Brother Akil?
Oh, I appreciated that.
Okay. All right. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, this program, of course, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds on Monday night, Monday evening, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with Brother Wahad. Right after that is Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Fridays, Time for an Awakening, 8 p.m. And then on Saturdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, Weekend Edition. That's tomorrow from 4 to 6. And then on Sunday, African Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday. And the Warren Ballantyne Show is Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. to 12 a.m. Warren Ballantyne Show. Right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. All right, my brother, go ahead. You said you had a couple of comments.
I did. So, you know, your comment about money, it triggered me in a positive way, right? So I want to reference the brother who's a political prisoner right now, still, Imam Jamil Alameen.
Yeah, right here in Atlanta.
Popularly known as H. Rat Brown.
Right.
And one of his autobiography that I highly recommend to anybody listening, and even people that aren't listening, I recommend it to everybody in our community because it was a game changer for me when I read it. It helped me in my position as a teacher and my position as a black man with many black youth listening to me and as coming to me for guidance and counsel. His autobiography entitled "Die Nigger Die," and he talks about the concept of money and how we oftentimes get caught up in money and, it distracts us from power, similar to how when Richard Nixon in the early 1970s, he attempted to weaken and defuse the Black Power movement by trying to promote this propaganda that Black capitalism under the control of Europeans, Black capitalism under the control of Europeans was equivalent to Black Power. So as if we should abandon our desires to nation build, abandon our desires to create institutions for ourselves, but we should just try to get a seat at the table and just get some money that they allow us to get. But one of the things H. Rat Brown talks about in his book is, the government or corporation come and tell you, bring us all the red bricks that you can find. Bring us all the red bricks that you can find. And, we'll give you a dollar for every red brick you can find. We'll give you $10 for every red brick you can find. And then they take all the red bricks. Everybody turns in all the red bricks in the whole society. And then the next day, the government turns around and says, okay, now we're using bricks for currency now. So all that money you got, the money you already had, and the money that we gave you in exchange for those bricks is worthless. Because that's not the currency. So I think that while right now, yes, we need money to secure food, clothing, and shelter, but we have to understand that money is a derivative. There's a group of people that determines the value of money. If all the stores, if every Walmart in this country decided that they weren't accepting United States currency anymore, then we wouldn't be able to, that money would be less valuable. And the money has value because store owners say, we'll take it. But if the store owners come organized and say, we're not taking this, then the money no longer has value. Right. And that's something that's an example that, H. Rat Brown or Imam Jamil Alameen talked about in his book, Die Nigger Die, again, that I recommend to everybody. But then you also have Bobby Wright, the late Bobby Wright. I also recommend his book, The Psychopathic Racial Personality.
Talk about it all the time. I talk about it on this program all the time. Yeah. One of my favorites.
Psychopathic Racial Personality. And the thing is, books like that and having been exposed, my good brother, the brother I told you that's a firefighter here in Philly that I want you to meet. He put me on to Bobby Wright and, some many years ago. And I'm always thankful to him that he put me on to Bobby Wright and introduced me to him and his work. The Psychopathic Racial Personality is really one of those books that you read it and it just makes sense that it's rooted in science. Bobby Wright was a psychiatrist and a psychologist. Mm-hmm. He had a mental health facility that's still open now in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 1970s and in the 1980s, and he analyzes the European personality just the way Europeans always try to analyze our personality. So he analyzes their personality, and it lets you know, oh, this is what these people are doing as a collective. This is historically what they've always done. This is what they're doing right now. So what that does is it allows me to be in a position where I'm like, no, this is not crazy. This murder, this most recent murder, it's not crazy. There's nothing crazy about it at all. There's no contradiction. They're maintaining their status quo. This is how Black life has always been regarded. This is how these people as a group have always treated us. Mm-hmm. They can't prove otherwise. And books like that, like The Psychopathic Racial Personality, where Bobby Wright basically argues in one of his essays, there's four essays in this book. The book in total is maybe 60 pages, if that much. You could read it in a day. But after you read it in a day, I recommend you read it again and again and again and expose your children to it as well. He basically looks at Europeans as psychopaths.
That's right.
Because based on their behavior, they fit the definition, the accepted definition in the scientific community of what a psychopath is. Mm-hmm. Like as a collective, right? So books like that, and one of the things Bobby Wright said is like, you know, we can't get so caught up in money. He said because white folks print money. So so really, it's the power is in the hands of the person that prints the money controls the money and has the power to decide what money is going to be.
It's just like this, Akil. Because of the pandemic, we're going to give out a lot of money, trillions of dollars. Now, this country is in debt to China, a few other places, and there's trillions of dollars in debt. Now, of course, you couldn't get no money if you was in that kind of debt, okay? But this country printed out trillions of dollars. I think it was $3 trillion, whatever the hell it was. And everybody, I got a little piece of that cheese. I got me like a G, you know? It was cool. I didn't care if I got it or not. And it's not like I didn't, not like I use it, I need it. Yeah, I do. I'm in America. But my point is that just like you just mentioned, they print the money. It is not backed up by anything but their word. And what backs up their word? The ability to kill your ass. So right. you take it as such. Okay.
And these are systems that are dictated by men that bleed just like you and me. So there's mm-hmm. nothing. So even though we go through our formal schooling process, and then we're kind of influenced to think that, you know, the economy in and of itself is this, you know, almost like this omnipotent concept. It's almost like a godlike structure, right? That is uncontrollable, and it's kind of like the weather. You know, I don't know. Some people say the weather is being controlled, but you know, that's another conversation. But you know, we kind of look at the economy. But no, there are men and women that decide. You know, European men and women, Asians, you know, Arabs that are making decisions that are dictating what's going to happen in the economy. And we have to understand that. We have to understand that. And then the other thing, when you mentioned Wade Noble, and I need to get Wade Noble's book on the Haitian Revolution. A lot of his books. I need to get a lot of his books. But I like his definition of power.
Yeah.
Because I think that what happens, again, in this situation, this is a time for us to talk about power. Because a lot of times racism becomes the distraction from us talking about power. And, you know, we're familiar with the Toni Morrison quote and how she talks about how racism distracts us from our work. Because we, you know, when you get caught up in the racism game, you end up trying to prove to other people that are racist against you that they shouldn't be racist towards you. You end up trying to prove that you're just as good as they are. And in terms of doing that, that's why equality, that whole concept of equality and us trying to prove that we're equal, when you do that, and this is a mathematical concept, when you do that, what you're promoting is your inequality because you've already made them the standard because you're trying to prove that you're equal. So
equal
if I'm trying to prove
them.
That I'm equal to you, it's not as if I feel like I'm superior to you and I'm trying to diminish myself to come down to your level. I'm accepting the fact that I'm beneath you. And I want you to accept the fact that I'm equal to you when we should not care. That's we right. should not make them the standard. Once you make another group or another person the standard, then you've already admitted your inferiority. You've already done that, whether we want to admit it or not. That's really what's happening. So, you know, equality becomes this game and this distraction, and then racism becomes the distraction, because a lot of people, because of how we've been conditioned and how we've been socialized, we see racism as the problem, when actually the problem is the lack of power. Like the brother Kwame Ture was very clear about this. You know, if a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem. If the white man has the power to lynch me, that's my problem. I got to deal with that, because that's a power issue, right? He can dislike me all he wants. He can call me a nigga all he wants. But if he doesn't have the power to do anything about it, or if I don't have the power to stop him from you know, ending my life, that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So because we as a group don't have power, that's a fundamental reason and that leads to why people like George Floyd and so many others throughout our history on this land can be murdered, because we lack the power to stop them from being murdered as a collective. So, you know, and you know, power, that whole idea of reality, how do you define reality? You know, it's like, you know, self-determination, Kuji Chakalia, the second day of Kwanzaa, the Nguzo Saba. Like, how do we define our reality? And do we even think about defining our reality? Like, I'm thinking about in terms of, like, you know, my mathematics tutoring and my mathematics educational services company and, you know, all this math. And I'm thinking about, you know, on another level, and levels that I've never thought about when I was really in the classroom working for, you know, charter schools and local public schools, in terms of just like redefining and even just something as simple as renaming mathematical concepts. Even that's a big deal. Because then I think about like think about it, you know, a lot of families are familiar with this concept called Singapore math. It's an idea of methods to teach math. And they just decided that, you know, okay, we're going to name this Singapore math. This is what we're going to do. And any of us can do that. We can rename the Pythagorean theorem. We don't have to call it the Pythagorean theorem. We can rename any method, any theorem from geometry. We can rename it. We can call it what we want. And if some people would push back and say, no, you can't do that, say, why not? They did it. Why, how come they can do it? How come Europeans can call something anything they want? And you mean to tell me we can't? But see, that's that belief of that inferiority. That's what happens when we privilege them in everything. You know, just like right now, people are rebelling. People are rioting, whichever you want to call it. And many people in our community will look down at that. And, you know, there are many, you know, that we can do analysis on that for different reasons. But some people are looking down on it because they're claiming that they just fundamentally have an issue with riot and rebellion. But the same people celebrate Europeans that have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they don't even realize it. They don't even realize what you're doing is you're affirming your own inferiority, because you don't think that you have the right to do that. You don't think that you're part of a group that has the right to do that. You only think that that's exclusively the domain of Europeans. Europeans only have the right to affirm their humanity. You don't think that you have the right to affirm your humanity, because Europeans have told you that you don't. And you've decided, you've innately accepted that reality as a reality for yourself. And that's mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about with that Wade Noble's definition of power, the definition of reality. Like, black people, our lives don't matter. Many of us have accepted that as a reality, and we act accordingly. We act accordingly.
Yep.
And until we even stop for a minute and say, wait, how, you know, whose reality have I accepted? You know, like in one of my night classes, I'm talking about, we're talking about medical apartheid, Harriet Washington's book. Mm-hmm. And I'm teaching mathematics through the use of medical apartheid. And we're talking about Hottentot Venus, Sarah Bartman, mm-hmm. and how, you know, who defines beauty? You know, who defines what's attractive? Who defines what's unattractive? These Europeans came up with a term called I may be mispronouncing it, but steatopegia. Steatopegia was a medical condition. They decided this was going to be a medical condition. If a woman has a big behind, a woman has a big butt, they called it a medical condition. Sarah Bartman had a huge butt. So they decided, because they have the power, that they're going to ridicule that and degrade her for that, and mm-hmm. degrade black women generally and African women generally as a collective for that. They have the power to do that. We have the power to say, no, we're not going to accept that definition for our women.
Well, that's only when, but that's only when you can shape your reality in your image and in your interest. But because we live in America, Europeans have shaped this reality in their image and in their interests. And unfortunately, we go along with them trying to be accepted in their reality. See, I always say, who are we in their reality? Initially, when they imposed themselves on us, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, you know. And of course, they wanted to impose that we were and justifying us being captive or enslaved because we had no culture. In fact, many people, and particularly Europeans, believe that we were really doing them a favor by getting them out of the jungle and, mm-hmm. and exposing them to Western ideas and to Western concepts and to the theology of Christianity. We were doing them a favor. But then, of course, you know, in fact, what did he used to say? We were happy in our captivity. We're happy in our enslavement. But then, of course, when the laws changed, then they said, they shiftless and lazy, you know.
Right.
See? So, you know, who are we in the reality today? We're thugs. We're drug addicts. No fit fathers. No fit mothers. Criminals. Justifying mass incarceration. Justifying the police killing us. We got some callers, brother. Want to take a call?
Can I say this real quick?
No, go ahead. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Real quick, just, you know, because I got to mention, since you brought that up, again, the root issue is definition of reality. Who's defining our reality? And everything issues from that.
That's right.
So, mm-hmm. again, you know, I mentioned steatopegia, but there's also the issue we know about dreptomania.
Yeah. Dreptomania. You're afflicted because you want to run away from your captivity.
Exactly. You have a mental illness. You have a mental, these Europeans come together and say, you have a mental illness if you do not want to be a slave. And that's accepted. And that's mm-hmm. acceptable. So again, we have to question definition. Even in 2020, we have to question definition.
Definitely.
We
got
to question definition.
Definitely.
That's why those books like Animal Farm by Orwell, those books become important because then you say, oh, but what were these pigs doing? These pigs were changing definition. That's how they maintain their power. They used their power and wielded their power to create definitions that would ensure and affirm their power and maintain it mm-hmm. through the use of words and definitions. And it was the same words, but they had the power to change the definitions of those words. So then you go back to chattel slavery and you say, okay, we're gonna say that if you want to run away, there's something wrong with you. You have dreptomania. You have an illness. You have a classifiable mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the hope is, okay, well, other brothers and sisters on the plantation will hear this and say, whoa, ain't nothing wrong with me.
I ain't gonna run. Right. That's right, I ain't running.
So that is control reality. When in fact, you may have been more crazy to believe that you should have been enslaved by these people. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there real quick. It's tied into what you were saying, too.
You have a caller, 646-646, good afternoon.
Yeah, Hotel OC, right quick. Peace to the brother. I just wanted to back up something that he said earlier in regards to the incident with Brother Floyd. What's basically going to happen is there's going to be no real justice in regards to this. The family's going to get some money. If he had any kids, his kids are going to get some money. And the system is basically going to stay the same. Because the lawyers who are representing their family are evil. You know, Stevie Wonder had a song called Evil. And in that song, he talks about evil.
Hold on, Jay. Crump? You talking about Crump and...
Crump and
Lee Merritt.
Evil.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'm going to tell you why they're evil. They're evil because they will never challenge the system to the point to whereas they will allow them to expose themselves. It's never a manner of taking it all the way to the final stage, which is a trial, which then exposes the evil. So if you don't want to expose the evil... You evil.
Oh, so I mean, you're saying, Jay, you're saying they're settlement lawyers. They don't want to go all the way with this. They're just trying to get a settlement so they can get paid, the family can get paid, and go back to the same old, same old.
Yes, that's what history shows.
Okay.
Any case that they've been involved with, that's been basically the final outcome. There has really been no systemic changes of the law or anything that represents these incidents not happening again. So whereby they make a lot of money, the family gets basically chump change, because I'll show you how they get chump change. In the same state of Minnesota last year or the year before last, an African killed the Yoruba, and his black behind was convicted, sentenced, I think, to 12 years in jail.
Right, he's a police officer.
The Yoruba family got $20 million. I don't know of any black family that ever got that much money. Now, mind you, this was a foreign Yoruba. He wasn't an American Yoruba. That money is not being spent in America. It's being spent wherever the hell she came from. So the thing is, as most of our people are blind, they want to get on TV and cry and beg the daddy to stop from putting their foot in their ass. They want to do all of these things instead of being warriors. The bottom line is, you live to do what? Die. So if you're not willing to die for what matters to you and your people,
Jay,
then you're useless.
Let me add this. In that situation in Minneapolis, the police officer, he was also, I think, I know he's African. I can't remember what kind of African he was. I know he was an American African. I think he was from the continent. I'm not sure, but anyway, he's black.
Somalia.
Huh?
He was from Somalia.
Okay, he was Somalian. Right. Okay, he was Somalian. So she comes to the car. It's a dark alley. He shoots her. He kills her. He's immediately fired. He's now he's been given 12 years. And just like you said, I didn't know the monetary amount that was given, $20 million. I'm quite sure that might have been one of the first and only police officers that have been convicted and imprisoned for killing a citizen. Now, in Milwaukee, the district attorney in Milwaukee, who's the only district attorney that I can remember since childhood all the way up until well into adulthood, E. Michael McCann, has never, not even indicted a police officer in the city of Milwaukee. But a brother who's a police officer had killed a Latino. It come to find out that they were going to indict him and maybe convict him. That brother committed suicide. He was the first one that was being indicted and convicted. What am I saying is that they don't do that to Caucasians. They do that to us, because in the system, they are there, as stated earlier, has that buffer. We must support and protect them, even when they do bad. It may look bad, and it is bad. We're mad about it, but damn it, these are ours, and this is our protection, and we must defend that.
Well, let me take it right here, and then I'll let you get to someone else to, you know, just show you how we as a people are so sick. Amy Klobuchar didn't even want to indict the guy that killed Brother Floyd. But here it is, the Negro, still talking about her, and mainly the Yoruba talking about making her the vice president. So now let me say this to you. If Sleepy Joe Biden decides that that's going to be his partner, and Negroes support him if he decides to do that, then I say this. We should get whatever we get in this country, and I wouldn't give a damn about an individual who votes for that bastard, just like I don't give a damn for an individual that votes for Fredo. You have shown yourself to not care one iota about African people if you support that. So the bottom line is, if you don't take that position, then just carry on. Hotep, and have a good day.
All right, Jay. Brother Akil?
Yeah, so two main things. So I like how, you know, he called out those attorneys. You know, he called them out. And I think that's important. But what I want to use this as an opportunity to leverage off of his comments about those guys, crumping them, and name some attorneys that I think, you know, especially our young people, because our young people need exemplars. And, you know, some attorneys that, you know, some are still alive, and some have transitioned. But people like Austin Maddox. Mm-hmm. They're young brothers and mm-hmm. sisters out here that are in school right now. They might be in middle school, they might be in high school, they might be in college, they might be in law school, or they may have aspirations of going to law school and becoming attorneys. And they need to know about, okay, there were black women and men that have fought for the collective and have used their education to enhance the collective and to uplift the race. They were race men and race women, right? So like Alton Maddox, who used to be down with the United African Movement, and you know they would have the lectures at the Slave Theater in Brooklyn, you know, back in the 90s mm-hmm. and the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see a lot of those great lectures from people like Kwame Ture and Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and Sharshi McIntyre and, you know, whoever, you know, coming through and just giving that information to our people. Derek Bell, who wrote many books and mm-hmm. many critiques, mm-hmm. you know, put me onto the concept of interest convergence theory, you know. Which we need to understand, because a lot of times we think that a certain group of people really has our back and really is an ally of us because they want the same, because they want to champion a certain initiative that we want to champion. But they may be trying to champion it for a totally different reason that really has nothing to do with us. It really just may be an issue of convenience. So people like Derek Bell, Chokwe Lumumba.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Republic of New Africa, later was the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi.
That's right. And now his son is.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Charles Hamilton Houston, who mm-hmm. initiated a lot of that work, the mm-hmm. work with Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
And even, you know, up here in Philadelphia, Cecil B. Moore. You know, Cecil B. Moore has a street named after him. And a lot of our youth don't know who Cecil B. Moore really was. Again, these were men. I need to find some women to add to this list. So forgive me, because we need to stress that concept of African complementarity, where we have, you know, the sisters and the brothers together. So I'm, you know, forgive me for not having women in this list. I need to find that. That's my fault. Mm-hmm. I don't have, you know, women in this list. There need to be women in this list. I only have brothers in this particular list that came to mind just now. Mm-hmm. But Cecil B. Moore, who did a lot of work right here in North Philly, where I live, down north in the 1960s, you know, and, you know, he got into it with a lot of the more establishment Negroes because a lot of the things he was doing was offensive to the white people. And he would have to tell these black people, these Negroes, I don't care about offending white people. I got 15,000 black people from North Philly to riding with me. I don't need these white people to like me. I don't care about none of that, mm-hmm. you know? And then also something else that I was reminded of when we talk about and this is another concept that I think we have to start having conversations about in our community, and we have to tell our children about. We have to talk about the impact of these double standard conversations. But again, I think that goes to understanding America and understanding Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
We have the double standard conversation because it comes from a space of the expectation that we're going to be treated fairly. If you expect to be treated fairly, then the double standard makes sense. It makes sense for you to point out a double standard, but there is no double standard. Like, and the thing, a lot of times what we do is we say, like, because I thought about, you know, instinctively, because I suffer from this too sometimes, right? But I have to catch myself, right? So when you mentioned that the white woman got shot in Minnesota by the African or the, you know, mm-hmm. the brother of African descent who was a police officer. It was dark. He didn't see what was going on. He ended up mm-hmm. killing her. Same thing happens in Brooklyn with a Kai Gurley. You got a Chinese cop that murders him. The Chinese cop gets off with community service, basically. The Asian community, you know, hits the streets and, you know, does all that. So again, another conversation about that, that leads us to another conversation about allies and allieshood and allyship, you know, because basically to me,
we have none. We have maybe none. I'm missing,
but my interpretation of the Asians hitting the streets and protesting Peter Liang being held accountable for murdering Akai Gurley, a brother from Brooklyn, is that basically listen, if white cops can kill niggas, Chinese cops can kill niggas too. That's basically what it is.
That's what it is.
So if you feel that way, then how are you my ally? I don't understand it. So that, but that's another conversation, maybe for another episode.
We have no friends.
It's a double standard.
That's right.
I think we have to get away from a lot of the double standard conversations that mm-hmm. permeate throughout our community, and you know, and in social media, because we always say, oh, well, look, you know, this white boy Dylan Roof, he gets arrested and they take him to Burger King, and you know, this, the, you know, but the black man, he gets, you know, a knee in his neck and he gets choked to death. It's like, we honestly, we have to start to say, so what?
Yeah.
That should be expected.
Yeah.
We're not going to get treated like them. Stop expecting to get treated like them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're here for. We've never been treated like them.
And never will be.
Once we remove that expectation to be treated like them, then the double standard conversation can be removed from our, We can stop wasting time saying that, because what that does is that's an appeal to the morality of, as we say, the Yorugu.
And he has no morality.
That appeals to morality. We cannot appeal to their morality.
That's right, because they have none.
Us over and over again, there is no morality.
That's right.
We cannot. We can't do that. We can't have a moral argument. Like, it's another thing Kwame Ture said. You know, he in his critique of King, who was his elder, who he had a great deal of respect for, who he learned a lot about, he was that King, being entrenched in the Christian tradition, he was of the belief that he could make that moral, he could mm-hmm. perform moral persuasion
mm-hmm.
and make a moral argument. You have to understand your enemy.
That's
you
right.
can't make a moral argument to a white man and a white woman in Mississippi or Georgia or Alabama or even the northern states, because King had the same issue when he went to Cicero in Chicago and outside of Chicago and Illinois, mm-hmm. had the same issues. You can't make a moral appeal to people that have no morality, people that would stomp the skull of your newborn baby. You can't make a moral argument to those people. You cannot do that. So again, that double standard argument is an outgrowth of a desire to appeal to the morality of somebody, saying, look, you know, basically you're not being fair.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, you're a parent and you're talking to your two children. You love your two children. Your two children are decent human beings. One child is being unfair to the other child. The parent says, oh, you know, are you really being fair? That's not fair. You know, you've been playing the video game all this time. You're not going to let her. Your children have morality. That's a valid argument to make in that situation,
because you taught them that.
To that in that situation, we can't make a moral argument,
because listen, Brother Keel,
over and over again, that there is no morality there.
Right, because you have that's learned, Brother Keel. It has never been in them to be that, because of their evolutionary development, they've always been selfish and greedy. They are an amoral people from the inception. That is not who they are. And us expecting that is foolish on our part, because we are a moral people by our very nature of who we are. We, when people came into us, into our land, we welcomed them, not like the European who is xenophobic. We welcomed them. Let me get another caller here, okay? There's a caller, unknown caller. Good afternoon.
Oh, brother. Oh, shit. Good afternoon, and good afternoon to your guest, brother. Oh,
hey, Brother Paul. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic, Brother Ocean. And, I'm really enjoying the interjection and the conversation with your guest. I didn't really catch his name. Sorry, because I missed
this. This is a young brother educator out of Philadelphia, Brother Akil Parker. Brother Akil, this is Brother Paul from the UK, calling from the UK.
Okay.
Paul, I heard. Did you guys have some demonstrations in the UK concerning the death of George?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it. I sent you a video. Yeah, I mean, I only got it late. I only got it this morning, and some people I talked to, they said that they got it late. So, as you can see from the video, it's outside the new embassy, American embassy. There's a demonstration of Africans. But, you know, I suppose it would have been bigger if you know, we'd had more notice. But, you know, people do what they do, and it's it's solidarity. That's what it is. It's solidarity. Yeah?
Good.
But let me address something, Brother Ochi, from where I'm looking at it. Yeah, I want to concur with Brother Jay in that. You know, I remember saying to you, and you've not. You know, I highly respect you, Brother Ochi, and as an elder. And there's another elder we have here. We call him Elder Erikuti, and he's similar. You and him are very similar. You share a lot of the same thing. And I put both questions to you. I put a question to you, and I put a question to him, and you both almost need to give the same answer. And I say that at some stage we're going to have to fight. Yeah, we're going to have to fight physically, mentally. We're going to have to die fighting. Fight. That's what I'm talking about. Fight. Now, most of the time in my life, when I've always been a fighter from I've been born. I spent most of my day from the age of eight. My dad's a martial artist, and I don't have no sisters. I've had poor brothers, and my dad. We had no choice. We had to run. We run every morning from the age of eight, and we were in the ring. I was in the boxing ring. Most of the people in my area, East London, box. We box, and if you can't box, you're not going to stay long on the street. That's how it was where the era I come from. So you have to fight. So fighting is in your blood. It's you know, if you're going to die fighting, you're going to fight. That's it. But I realize now, not everybody's up to fighting. I have to accept that not everybody's up to fighting. And I'm not just starting fighting physically, fighting mentally. Now, let me give you my authority for fight. My authority, and I've just started to reread him and regurgitate some of his wisdom, is Franz Ferdinand. You know who that is?
Franz Fanon. Yes, go ahead. Yes.
Franz Fanon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, to me, he was a psychologist also. I come from Martinique. I lived in France. Involved in the in a few conflicts, not just an educator, not just an academic, but he actually got involved in the fight.
The Algerian Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely,
Algeria.
So what I'm saying to you, right? I come to the conclusion, it's actually delusional to think you're going to walk your way through this, talk your way through it, march your way through this, sing your way through this, dance your way through this. It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. So at the end of the day, some of us have got to come to the conclusion. Some examples need to be set. Okay? Examples need to be set. And that's it. You know, that's the reality. Let me just say this here. I remember a few years ago, there was one of these incidents where the police shot. I can't remember exactly. There's so many of them now. It's so crazy. The police shot someone in America, you know, the same brutality, yeah? And I remember where I live, where I was living at the time. There was, I understand what happened is an African had a party for his daughter. And somebody had put it on the internet. And obviously, if they put it on the internet, everybody's going to turn up. And I remember looking outside. My road is quite a quiet road, but all my area is a quiet area. But the area was full, absolutely full, about 9 o'clock at night, no, 10 o'clock at night, with young African everywhere. Yeah, I was there, men and young men and young women, yeah. And I didn't know at that time what was going on, you know what I mean? And then, you know, when I came out, the police turned up. Obviously, someone called the police because people didn't realize what was happening. And they overreacted and they turned up with dogs and stuff, you know, and you know, started really going into the crowd and whatever, yeah. And I remember young guys shouting out, "We're not African Americans." I couldn't believe it when he said that. I absolutely could not believe it because obviously I got young people myself. But to hear a young man shout out, "We are not African Americans," I was thinking, "What is that? How they see it? Is that all this social media and all these killings?" With no real reaction. Is that how they see it? So what is he saying? We are not African Americans. Because as a young person, I spend time in America. You know, I've got family in America. Before I was in America, I look highly to African Americans. I saw them as, I know it's kind of crazy to say this, but I saw them as almost like my savior. You know what I mean? You know, they had all these stars and champions.
And that leads me down a different path as well, Ocean. I must say this. Sometimes I listen to the talk through this talk radio or different radio stations. I don't think African-Americans really know the influence, or if they know how to execute and effectively use their influence around the world. I don't think they know. And when I listen to the conversations, I think sometimes when you're in a situation, because of the constant onslaught, you may forget the real power you have. And that's something your guest said. I don't know if he was alluding to the fact that we don't have power. I'm not sure he was saying that, but I'm saying that we do have power. We have immense power. You have immense power there. But we don't effectively use it. And what I mean by that, right? I mean, look, if you fully understood the influence you had outside with blacks in the UK, in Europe, as you call it, or in Africa, you would be utilizing it. And that means that you would be regularly traveling to these places and living among. I mean, I hear you talk about Europeans. You can't really understand Europeans unless you go to the root, and the root is Europe, and live among them, whether you live in Germany, UK, Ireland, or whatever. You can't really claim to understand who Europeans really are, because Europeans don't come from America. They come from Europe. And you have to live among them to actually know them. What am I saying? I'm saying that we need a bigger idea, and that idea has to come outside of America. It won't be one in America. You want to really understand Europeans, come to Europe. Find out who they are. I know Francis Crest Wilson lived in Germany. I know a lot of these great people went and studied and find out who these people really are. And then you start to see their weaknesses. You start to see chips in their armor. Yeah, because there's a stage show being put on in America, and I'm sure some of these killings are part of that stage show.
All right.
I don't know if you get where I'm coming from.
I got you, Brother Paul. Brother Kill?
Definitely agree with that. Again, I mean, that speaks to, like, the art of war, like understanding your enemy, understanding the European. And, you know, that's something that, you know, a lot of the ASCAP scholars, like Jacob Carruthers, would talk about, like, you know, we really need to spend considerable time studying them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense because we live in a society that they control. So, you know, and they've spent, you know, they have had the level of awareness to know, okay, they need to study us because they want to control us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to know, okay, what makes us happy? What makes us sad? You know, what is our history? What is our culture like? You know, so they can, access into it.
Right. Well, that whole thing was, though, to dictate to us, you know, but to me, Marima Ani's book, Urugu, I consider the Bible. That was one book that really helped shape my understanding of our situation, looking at the European and how he views things, how he views others, how he views himself, how he deals with religion. All of the Urugu, I think, is a book, although a lot of people can't read it or can't deal with it. It's too big. It's just like Amos Wilson's Blueprint for Black Power, you know.
You got to take your time. I still, admittedly, need to finish Urugu. I've never finished it or mm-hmm. Blueprint for Black Power. I still need to finish both of those.
Yeah. Well, I've read Urugu twice. In fact, the part on religion, I read that, I think, at least three times because it was really important because the imposition of the religion that they put on people, you know, here the European has a religion that they say, and it has to be for them, a fact. Although all of it is based upon what we as African people had brought. All of it. Nothing new, nothing different. But theirs happened to be historical and factual. And everybody else is a myth, a fairy tale, you see. So, I mean, you know, it is interesting, the mindsets of the European. But I don't waste my time. My whole concern is the liberation of African people. This program is dedicated to independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. The motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. That's it. It's the bottom line. There is no discussions.
I have a lot. I want to say this too. I have respect for people's different trajectories and also the spaces that people are at in their personal trajectories in terms of how they negotiate and navigate Western society, how they negotiate and navigate white supremacy theory and spaces that are controlled by those theories and that mythology. But then again, I also recognize that there are those of us that are at different places on our trajectory. So we may not respond in the same way that a lot of people may respond to tragedies like the murder of George Floyd. Because what it is, it's just confirmation. It's not, I don't think we're necessarily desensitized by it, but it's just confirmation that the work that we're doing really needs to be done and that we need to continue that work. And again, but we also recognize, because of where we're at on our trajectory, that there's nothing crazy about this, and there's nothing out of the ordinary about it. But again, that comes from all the study that a lot of our people either have not been exposed to, or they've been exposed but have been unwilling to do. Mm-hmm. When you become willing to do that work and do that study, like once upon, I was not willing to do at one point in my life, then these things seem surprising. But then once you realize, like, no, this is the norm. This has been consistent. It just wasn't being exposed as much, or we weren't thinking about it, or we weren't thinking about it in the proper context. Then you just know, just keep doing your work. Just, you know, just keep, you know, stay low and keep firing, you know, just keep doing your work and, you know, keep trying to build. And I believe if we build it, they will come, you know. We didn't even get to talk about, I know the time's almost up. We didn't even get to talk about Central Park Karen. And one thing I do about Central Park Karen, Amy Cooper, is right. Another conversation we have to have in our community is about the role that the white women have played in our oppression, because oftentimes the white man gets a lot of the credit for our oppression, when in fact I think Europeans have a complementarity of their own. And I remember reading, this is what did it for me. When I started reading Black Jacobins by C.L.R. James, I was trying to learn about the Haitian Revolution, which our children need to know about, because that a lot of times the history that's given to us is just a history of losses. Like, we're constantly losing. We're constantly getting enslaved, or we got beat, or we got genocide was visited upon us. But there are many wins. We've had a lot of wins as well in this ongoing battle, right, with other cultures and other groups. Reading Black Jacobins, and they talked about how, you know, some of the experiences of our ancestors in Saint-Domingue and on the island of Haiti, before it was called Haiti, and how, you know, there were sugar plantations. That's where the money was. That's why France was getting so rich, because all the sugar plantations there and the planters and how brutal they were. And it talked about a woman, a female planter, who actually punished a enslaved African on the plantation by putting him into a vat of boiling sugar cane. And burned him alive. And that clicked for me, because then I said, wait, I remember having this internal dialogue with myself. I said, wait, the white women were doing that too? Because you don't see that. Like, you might watch a movie like Gone with the Wind or something, and you see the women.
Right.
You see the women in Gone with the Wind, you're like, oh, well, they was just kind of, you know, it really was the white man. The white man was doing it all. Oh. The women kind of, it's like, you know, innocent bystanders. No, that's historical revisionism.
The
white woman has been just as
no doubt
impactful.
No doubt. Just like the death of a lot of the children that the Caucasian man who had raped the sisters and that offspring, if she would bring that offspring into her home and abuse that child, that mulatto, so-called mulatto child, to the point of eventually killing that child. And they had to enact a law. They had to enact a law that would exonerate her or excuse her if somebody died as a captive on their property.
So understanding the history, we won't experience the cognitive dissonance that we might experience if we say, well, wow, like, why are these white women, you know, calling the police, and, you know, this person is just, you know, trying to just watch some birds in Central Park. Like, oh, no, that should be expected. That should be expected. And the fact that once we start to expect that, then while we're the person, maybe not him, maybe not the person that was in that situation based on his response to the situation, but another brother or another sister that gets, you know, accosted or is being terrorized by a white woman who is threatening to call the police, which may result in a situation where mm-hmm. he or she gets murdered because mm-hmm. of that, while they're doing what they're doing, living their life, they will also be attempting to build an independent society.
But see, you look at what Caucasian women have done historically within our captivity. Anytime they said, he raped me or he touched me, Emmett Till comes to mind, you know, but there were so many others, the Scottsboro boys, so many others. All they had to do was say it, you know.
And I think, too, now that you say it, I'm glad you said that, because now I'm thinking we possibly need to reframe, because even with that story, Big Milam and or her husband and her brother-in-law, Big Milam and whatever his name was, they're seen as the antagonists, and they are. But that woman is just as much of an antagonist.
Right. She precipitated it.
As those two were. And I think, again, because this is all about how we teach our children. So in terms of framing that story, and this is something I'm going to start doing from now on. Now, we've had this conversation, you know, and just thinking about in terms of, so when we talk about Emmett Till, we don't just talk about, okay, those two white men that came and banged on the door in the middle of the night and dragged Emmett out of the bed. We also talk about the woman that made the accusation in the first place.
Right.
She's equally as guilty and equally as responsible for his murder and his lynching.
Listen, and brother, I gotta go.
There's nowhere safe.
Yeah. I got to go. Thank you once again, Brother Akil. I appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on. Look forward to the next time you come on for more discussion. You know, we can take any subject and we can run with it. I appreciate you, young man. Yeah.
All right. Appreciate the opportunity.
Always. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend. You have a great weekend. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivihoria means our victorious destiny. Bivihoria, family, we will be victorious. Have a great weekend. Peace.